Today's briefing coincides with the release of new research in The Lancet, and we'll be hearing from Professor Richard Beasley, who is the lead author of this research. He is from the Medical Research Institute of New Zealand. There'll be an opportunity to ask questions of any of the speakers at the end of the presentation, but for now I'll hand over to Professor Richard Beasley for his presentation. So over to you, Richard.
Thank you, Lyndall, and good morning and good afternoon, everyone. I've been asked to speak for about 7 minutes, and I've structured it perhaps with the seven questions that which I addressed in the recent Lancet podcast, and I hope that you have those in front of you. I'm comfortable whatever format you want to run it, whether I just go through each of the seven or whether you want to interject as we go along. I'll leave that to the chair.
So, Richard, it's probably better if you go through all seven. We'll leave the questions to the end.
Okay, thank you. So, first of all, what is the IVAC program? Well, it's a large international epidemiology study of childhood asthma that also looks at the related allergic disorders, rhinoconjunctivitis, also known as hay fever, and eczema. The study's been going for about 20 years now, originally undertaken to determine the prevalence of asthma worldwide, but more recently the trends in asthma prevalence, and also the role of causative factors that might influence the risk of developing asthma. And so what we're reporting is part of the third phase of ISAC, which has been undertaken over the last 5 years. So ISAC's made up of three phases. The first phase was an international prevalence survey, which had just over 50 countries took part. The second phase was a very intensive study on the causation of asthma in smaller groups of children in a smaller number of centres. Phase three was really a repeat of phase one, the international prevalence survey, a second time, which enabled the trends in asthma prevalence to be identified. Also gave a more complete picture of the international patterns of asthma because we had far more centres took part. But most importantly, unlike phase one, we had risk factor data at the individual level. That allowed us to look at the risk factors. For example, in this paper, the association between paracetamol use and symptoms of asthma, rhinoconjunctivitis, and eczema. In terms of the evidence that preceded the study, this is not a new hypothesis. The hypothesis that paracetamol use in infancy and childhood may increase the risk of asthma was first proposed about 10 years ago by a group of American authors who suggested that the change from aspirin to paracetamol in the States in the 1980s may have been responsible in part for the increasing prevalence of asthma since that time. And they really put forward in their hypothesis some immunological mechanisms by which this might occur. Now, since this time, there have been quite a few studies that have reported a link between paracetamol use and risk of asthma, but they haven't received much attention, and they haven't really been put together, which if they had, would really give quite a consistent story that this is a potential risk factor. So just very briefly, there are associations between the intrauterine exposure to paracetamol, so in mothers who have taken paracetamol when pregnant, that is associated with an increased risk of asthma in their children. There was one randomized controlled trial in children showing that if you took paracetamol for fever compared with ibuprofen, which is similar to aspirin, that the children with asthma who took paracetamol were twice as likely to end up in hospital with an asthma attack. There have been a number of studies in adults, epidemiological studies from quite diverse populations from Britain and Ethiopia and other centres, other countries, that have suggested that there's an increased risk of asthma with paracetamol use and that there's a dose response. With the increasing amount of paracetamol you use, the greater the risk and the greater the risk of severe asthma. There's a big nurses study in America showing that for people who have never had asthma before, if they took a lot of paracetamol, they were at greater risk of developing asthma for the first time. There was a correlation between use of paracetamol at a national level, per capita consumption, and the prevalence of asthma, and the suggestion this may explain the very high rates of asthma in English-speaking countries, which have very heavy use of paracetamol. And over time trends, as paracetamol replaced aspirin for use in children due to concerns about the real risks of aspirin therapy, that the increasing use of paracetamol has been temporarily associated with an increased prevalence of asthma. finally, there are a number of mechanisms by which taking paracetamol may reduce your antioxidant defenses, leading to inflammation of the lung, particularly in the airways, causing asthma, and also modifying the immune response to make it more allergic. So each quite small evidence in their own right, but when you put together, we felt it was a hypothesis that was consistent and coherent enough to actually warrant being addressed in the ISAC program. In terms of the methodology of ISAC, well, it's a standardized administration of a written questionnaire, obtaining data on asthma and rhinoconjunctivitis and eczema symptoms, and looking at risk factors. So it was administered to the parents of the 6 to 7 year old children, and we obtained 73 centers from 31 countries involving 200,000 children. So in some respects, the strength of the study was the simplicity of the questionnaire, which meant it could be administered in a standard form to a wide variety of centers and populations to look at the association across these different populations, which I think is probably one of the strengths of the study. In terms of the results, well, the primary measure was the association between paracetamol use for fever in the first year of life was associated with about a 50% increased risk of asthma symptoms. This was observed worldwide in all major regions of the world, with different medical practices, availability of paracetamol, different frequency and nature of the childhood febrile illnesses, and different environmental and lifestyle factors. In terms of current paracetamol use in the 12 months before the 6 to 7 year old children were interviewed, there was a dose-response relationship with increasing paracetamol use being associated with increasing risk of asthma. Similar findings for rhinoconjunctivitis and eczema, and the association also held up for severe asthma symptoms. So in some respects, we weren't really worried about an association with any wheeze. We were more worried about repeat attacks of asthma that was something that was clinically significant. Perhaps one of the most important points we need to make is that we cannot determine causality from an epidemiological study such as this, where there was a cross-sectional survey of a population. That would require a randomized controlled trial. And there are many different forms of bias that could be introduced into a study such as the one we've undertaken. And it's for that reason that we have not claimed causation in terms of the association that we have found. Certainly, if it was a causative association, it would be of major significance, because it would indicate that paracetamol use may be an important risk factor for asthma, and that it may be what an explanation for why asthma has become more common over the last 20 to 30 years. But I think the most important point, and the point that I hope we can come back to in discussion, is what does this mean in terms of clinical practice? Well, we believe that our findings do not constitute a reason to stop using paracetamol in childhood. That paracetamol remains the preferred drug to relieve pain and fever in children, but with one qualification. We support the current guidelines of the World Health Organization, which really says that paracetamol should not be used routinely for fever, but should be reserved for children with a high fever, and they say over 38.5. And so I think that when we look at the use of paracetamol in many of the populations involved in the survey, there was far higher use of paracetamol than is currently recommended. So where we certainly do not want to send a message that people should not take paracetamol, paracetamol remains the preferred agent to take for fever in childhood. But perhaps they should limit the paracetamol use to that which is currently recommended, which is not routinely, but for children with a high fever. Finally, the other point I'd like to make is that it's really important also that asthmatics, both children and adults, recognize that paracetamol is very strongly the preferred treatment for pain and fever, because the other group of medications that can be used, aspirin and what are called NSAIDs, or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as naproxen or ibuprofen, they have a real risk of provoking severe attacks of asthma in people, both children and adults, with asthma. So once again, there is no suggestion from our study that people should be switching from paracetamol to have asthma. they should continue to use paracetamol as the preferred drug of choice, but that they should perhaps limit the amount they take to within what is currently recommended. So I think that's my 7 minutes.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Professor Beasley, for that presentation. There's now an opportunity for journalists to ask questions. There's a couple of ways that you can do that. Questions can be asked by either typing your question into the Q&A box on the bottom right of your screen, or for those of you joining us over the phone, you're actually muted at the moment, but in a moment we will unmute you so that we can get your question and you can ask your question directly of Richard. So we've got one question online already. So Paul Reynolds, his question is, Richard, do you have any... something blocking my screen. I'll just get my colleague to read it out. Sorry about that.
Okay, the question from Paul Reynolds is, Richard, do you have data? Do you have data on any kids that had fever but did not get paracetamol? It seemed like the questionnaire only asked about paracetamol for fever.
No, the question, as Paul mentioned, the question was, did you use paracetamol for fever in the first year of life? So that our findings relate to the use of paracetamol for fever.
Okay, I've got another question online. Tori Shepherd asks, what proportion of children were taking paracetamol at a higher than recommended level?
Right, we can take that from figure 3 on page 1044, which is in the 6 to 7 year old children, where if we take, for example, New Zealand, that 22% of the children were receiving paracetamol at least once a month. And certainly that would be more than would be recommended in terms of use of paracetamol for a high fever, suggesting that certainly in the New Zealand population, and I imagine also in the Australian population, paracetamol may now be used far more excessively than it was actually ever intended to. And that we would propose that that level of paracetamol use is probably is more than is recommended in the standard consensus guidelines. So our message is that paracetamol should remain the preferred treatment, but perhaps that it should be limited to the severe illnesses in which it is actually required.
Okay, we'll just unmute the call-in users now, because I know some of them have questions. So, Gemma, you had a question?
Yes, Richard, I just wanted to clarify. Is it your finding that giving more than the recommended doses of paracetamol for fever in the first year, did you say it was a 50% increased risk of asthma symptoms?
No, first of all, it was not... giving more than the recommended. It is people who use paracetamol in the first year.
Okay.
And that was associated with a relative risk. If you look at table 1, top right, the multivirus analysis of 1.46. So that's about a 40 to 50% increase risk in terms of the association. And I just mentioned that we controlled in our analyses for the adjusted analyses was for sex and region and language and the gross national income of the country. And then in the multivirus analyses, we adjusted for other factors, environmental risk factors that might have contributed to either the risk of asthma or the use of paracetamol. So they were things like antibiotic use in the first year of life or level of parental education, smoking, diet, other factors that might have influenced the risk. And so that is the reason for both the adjusted and then the multivirus analyses.
Thank you.
We'll just unmute the other calling users now in case any of you have a question. Speak now. Nope. And just check, we have one more question online. The question is, how significant is risk increase compared to the risk increase from smoking or particles in the air?
Well, I think that I'll answer that two ways. The first is that our current understanding of asthma in terms of the accepted risk factors like smoking or air pollution just do not explain either the high prevalence of asthma or the increase in prevalence in asthma in the recent decades or the differences in asthma prevalence between countries worldwide. And it's really because of that that we're having to go beyond the traditional risk factors to try to think there must be some other factors that we hadn't appreciated that might explain the risk. Now, I cannot quote you the figures. In the questionnaire, we did have a very comprehensive group of environmental risk factors, of which smoking was one of them. Now, I cannot quote you the figures because I don't have them in front of me, but what was striking about the paracetamol findings was that was the strength of the association, which was considerably greater than many of the other established risk factors.
Okay, well, just the caller muters are still unmuted, so we'll just give you one last opportunity to ask any final questions of Richard.
Yeah, I'm Anne Cameron from New Zealand Doctor. I've got a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Richard. Just wondering, what is the advice then for parents? I'm just trying to clarify. So if they should only use paracetamol if their child has a fever over 38.5 degrees Celsius,
yeah,
is that what you're saying?
That may be difficult in terms of parents having the ability or the opportunity to actually measure the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the two messages to parents is that when you look at all the safety data together, paracetamol clearly is the preferred agent in terms of safety, and that's even including our results. So paracetamol is the preferred agent, but that we should reserve it for when the child is sick with a high fever and not give it frequently for when the child may just be unsettled in sort of a non-specific sort of way. And it appears that that has almost become the way in which paracetamol is now used. For example, 1 in 5 children in New Zealand would get paracetamol at least once a month. And that is beyond the recommended use of paracetamol. So our message is very clearly, it's status quo in terms of paracetamol being preferred and given according to guidelines, but perhaps we need to limit our use back to what the actual recommended guidelines are.
Okay, so they need to be sick with a high fever,
yeah.
And technically that's over 38.5, but they might not be able to measure that. And so what should they do if their children are sort of, you know, sick and unsettled?
Just care for them like you would otherwise.
Okay.
And there's really no evidence that paracetamol actually benefits the child in that circumstance anyhow.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Gemma Chapman from Channel 10. Just wanting to clarify, do you know what the recommended guidelines are for the usage for children?
Yes, well, we actually have that in our press release, that the WHO, and I'll quote it, recommend that paracetamol should not be used routinely but should be reserved for children with a high fever.
Okay, but there's not a specific, there are so many times per month.
Oh, in terms of the dosing, yes, now there is,
yes.
There is a recommended dose as well, and you would have to refer to your Australian formulary for that.
Okay, sure.
But if you could get a paediatrician in Australia to look that up for you, that is really important because there's also evidence that parents both administer not enough and too much paracetamol compared to the recommended dose.
So you're happy with the recommended dose?
Yes, this doesn't challenge the recommended dose at all because we're just talking about use of paracetamol.
Okay, one final question if I may. Dr. Adrian Lowe, an epidemiology expert at the University of Melbourne, I don't know if you've seen his comments. He said that the results did not definitively show that early exposure to paracetamol increased the risk of asthma. He raised a couple of concerns, the concern of risk of recall bias, because parents were asked 7 years later to recall how, you know, if they'd given their children paracetamol in their first year. Secondly, he said you need to question why these kids were getting paracetamol in early life. The number of early life infections, were they considered? Was it the infection rather than the paracetamol?
Yes, and he is absolutely right in his opinion, and that is why we've said that you cannot determine a causative relationship for this association. His interpretation is absolutely correct, and we are in agreement of it, or we would say he's in agreement with our interpretation. And there are many different forms of biases that can influence the findings and contribute to the association, not just recall bias, but response bias, differences in translation, this confounding by indication, which is what he's saying in terms of whether they were given up for an illness that would have later led to asthma, and reverse causation if children with asthma or who are going to get asthma have more of these illnesses. So it's because of the biases inherent in an epidemiology study that you attempt to control for but cannot do completely, that we're saying that that you cannot determine causation, but the evidence is striking all the same. And clearly, to resolve this, we now need to do randomized controlled trials where you can overcome these biases. And you'll see that our final, I'd like to point you to our final paragraph, which is really the summary of the whole thing. Our final statement is that the priority now is not actually more epidemiology, it's actually to do some proper randomized controlled trials to actually sort this issue out. And we're hoping that publication of our paper will actually lead many research groups to actually get on and do those studies that we don't currently have, but should have, when you think of how widely used paracetamol has been used in childhood.
Thank you. Richard, I have a question from Tori along those lines. Will you actually be looking at doing clinical trials to follow this up yourself?
Oh, yes, we're well advanced. And so we'll certainly be doing some studies here in New Zealand, but our hope, obviously, is that other research groups around the world will do. There'll be a whole series of clinical trials that will be done by different groups so that at the end of the day we can get a clear answer in terms of whether there is a risk, and if there is a risk, what is the nature of it and how does it relate to dose and the way it's given and what it's given for, and how it compares with other treatments, both drug treatment and non-drug treatments. There's a lack of evidence on which we can make firm recommendations, and that is what we now require.
Fabulous. I'll just give our call-in users one last chance to ask any questions. No, and we have no further questions online, so that is for today's briefing. An audio copy of the presentation will be posted on our website at www.aussmc, which is aussmc.org, later today. And feel free to contact us directly if you have any specific requests or questions. That's the Australian Science Media Centre on 08 8207 7415, or for those of you joining us from New Zealand, you can contact the New Zealand Science Media Centre on 04 499 5476. So thank you again for joining us for today's briefing, and thanks to our speaker.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.